We're going to talk about how to fill out a purchase and sale agreement using, an owner financing offer. I'll show you the purchase agreement that we use.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 259, and today we are starting a new series on how to fill out a purchase and sale agreement with seller finance. Before we get started, I wanted to mention some of our resources. If you're looking for a mentor, visit roimentors.com to learn more about Jeff's apprentice program and the Creative Financing Academy. For networking and questions, make sure you join the Creative Financing Podcast community in Facebook. The second Thursday of every month, don't miss Jeff's free creative financing class on Zoom. If you're local to the Salt Lake area, we host an in-person meetup at Club 90 in Sandy, Utah. Details in the description below.
All right. Well, today we are going to go over not a very exciting topic. However, one that is always, I see this asked every single day. So obviously it's needed. Hopefully it will help people. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about how to fill out a purchase and sale agreement using, an owner financing offer. It is not that difficult. What we're going to do, we're going to go through some stuff and I'll show you the purchase agreement that we use. We'll even make that available as long as you join our Creative Finance Podcast Facebook group. I've been using this contract for 20 plus years. I've used it in multiple states and it's worked. So I would tell you it works pretty much whenever and wherever I've needed it.
And I've been using it for a few years as well. And I feel like, to your point, you mentioned this was a boring subject, but I feel like there's so much content out there on how to get to the point where you write an offer. Yeah. But once you get an offer accepted, there's so many people out there that just don't know what to do. I know when I got my first one accepted, I didn't know what to do. So I came and bugged you. And now we have this beautiful episode or a little series here where we can actually go through it.
Yep.
And teach so many people out there how to get to that point and be confident in the next step.
And when I say that it's not exciting, it's not creative finance, right? It's not, hey, look what we can do. And to be honest, when you understand how to do this, it's super simple, right? I mean, Cody, would you agree? Once you've done it a few times, it's quite easy.
Yeah, but the first time is definitely daunting.
I would agree. And so why don't we take a look at the contract that we're going to use first? Just go over a few things. Can you guys see this?
Yep.
Yep.
All right. So this is the purchase and sale agreement that I use on a regular basis. And I don't really, to be honest, it doesn't really matter to me anymore if I have someone else write up the agreement, as long as they include some things that I know I want included and it's written up in the way that I want it to be written up. But whenever we can, we try to take control of writing the purchase and sale agreement. So you can see,
use this for commercial and residential, right?
I've used it for both. It's not ideal for commercial, but I know this pretty back and forward, and you see, it's not very long, right? If we look at this, it's one page, two pages and a signature page. And when I used to use this, I used it on legal size paper and it was one page front and back. If you wanted to do that, I don't like doing that anymore. So I want you to, we're going to kind of switch back and forth between screens and we're going to go through this pretty much line by line so that it's going to be hard for you not to have a good understanding of how to fill this out. I think I could fill this out on a deal in 2 minutes. Now there will be an addendum and we'd use, it is called the disclosure page. And the disclosure page is always the same, so that's super easy. The addendum would take as long to fill out as the whole purchase and sale agreement. I used to handwrite this when I would go to meet with sellers at their property. and I could still do it in 2 minutes. So,
Jeff, is this something that like you had a lawyer draft up like a while ago and then you just keep reusing it? Or
this is a Ron LeGrand contract that I got back in 2000, and I've modified it a bit over mm-hmm. the time, and I'll show you a couple of things that I've done, but not much. And it's funny, I was on Facebook, it was either last night or the night before, and mm-hmm. I saw someone giving away a purchase and sale agreement. It was this. I doubt that, you know, there's all kinds of purchase and sale agreements out there. Some are super, super short, probably too short, and some are much longer. Then you have the state approved purchase and sale agreement, which is like, I think a minimum of 6-7 pages. Then if you add in a bunch of other stuff, it could easily be 10 pages, which is a little more daunting. But we'll go through this and we'll simplify it. And we're going to do this over the course of a few different episodes so that we can kind of go into some detail. And then in the last episode, we'll go through a couple of examples. So filled out. When we went through the contract, where it starts, it says parties, and then it has space for buyer and seller, okay? Buyer and seller, Nicole, what do you think? Do you think we need one buyer, two buyers, the entity name? What's the name that we should be looking for?
For the buyer?
Yeah, or for the seller, sorry.
Oh, it would be your, or so let's say I'm the seller, it would be either my entity or my name.
Whatever shows up on the county recorder, whatever's showing up on title, right? So,
yeah.
And that's what we want to be. I wouldn't talk to a seller and say, okay, Nicole, I'm just going to assume that the property's in your personal name and your personal name with no middle initial. It has to be exact. So, you definitely want to go look it up and know what it says on title. And it's always a great.
And I'll say be wary of using sites like PropStream to get that info as well. Because I've had an instance in the past where PropStream looks like they have that data, but it's outdated. So it's the data on the county recorder is different and that can create issues. So like Jeff said, go straight to that source of truth, the county recorder. Get that information.
Yeah, my experience with some of the software, Cody, is that they're delayed, right? So that they may not be as updated, especially if there was a semi-recent sale. So, you know, if someone bought it a few months ago, it may not be totally updated. But there's easy ways to find, I think it's netronline.com that you can go to. And the only reason I don't know that is I don't do this part. And Cody, where were you? Where would you go to check title? Like if you were working in Kansas?
Well, I would just, whatever county the property's in, I would just Google that county name and then county recorder. So if it's in Utah, maybe Salt Lake County Recorders.
Yeah.
And then you can go in there. Every county is going to be a bit different, but you just plug in the full address. And you'll get the info back of who's the current owner, who's actually on title for the property.
Is that where you would also find the legal description?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So the next place where it says, and I'll just quickly show you. So if we're back on the purchase agreement, okay, so buyer would go here. So my entity, we offer options, Inc. And Nicole Kamanjian, and if there's anyone else on there, would go here, seller. And the property is in whatever county, and the legal description. Now, I can tell you, I'm lazy. We don't normally enter the legal description. You should. You 100% should. Do you do that, Cody? Do you enter the legal description?
I always put in the APN number, so like that's the lot number and stuff. And if it's so, if you're buying a property and then a lot behind it, I make sure to put both of those in.
Yeah, and that's what we will do too. Is if there's if it's multiple properties, or we'll put the tax ID numbers in. But you should do that, and then the address, right?
Is the legal description, like, would you get that from the county as well? Because I know they. they have like their own wording on how they describe the property.
Yeah, and you may not want to write it all out because some of them can be lengthy. But I would put the tax ID number, the parcel ID, the tax ID, the serial number. They call it different things in different places, but it's the number that refers to that legal description. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go through this section. This is probably the hardest section for everyone, right? Number one. So I just want to go through it and then we'll go back to the PowerPoint. It says total purchase price to be paid by buyer is payable as follows. Binder deposit, which will remain as a binder until closing unless sooner forfeited or returned. Okay, binder deposit is earnest money. Additional binder deposit due within days after date of this agreement. So if you're adding, maybe you're putting a small amount of money down and then you have some additional earnest money that you're going to put down maybe after due diligence or, you know, 3 weeks later, whatever, that would go here. Balance due at closing, not including buyer's closing costs, prepaid items, or prorations, in U.S. cash or locally drawn certified or cashier's check. Approximately, you would either check this or check that. Okay. When do you check approximately? Either of you know?
Probably a foreclosure. Or you aren't sure how much, like a sub two, like you're not sure how much
that's correct,
that down payment, right? Will be.
A sub two or where you're taking over some kind of existing debt and you don't know the exact balance, then it becomes approximate. And if it's approximately here, it will be approximately here. Otherwise, it's exactly and exactly. Okay. Proceeds of a new loan to be executed by buyer to any lender other than seller. So if someone was going and getting a bank loan or borrowing private or hard money, you would put the balance that they would do here. Purchase money loan to seller. Okay. So if you were doing any kind of owner finance, this would be the balance that you're carrying. Other financing. In 22 years, I've never filled this line out, so not really sure what it's for. Existing mortgage balance, encumbering the property to be taken subject to by the buyer. Okay, so, hey, if you're doing a sub two, there's got a line item for it. And this is where you'll guess approximately what, seeing it's already noted to be approximate. And then total purchase price. You check one of these. And you would put in the amount of the price. And you'll see in one of the examples later on in this series that I filled out something very different than maybe you would ever fill out. And I'm not really sure why I did it this way, but we'll deal with that in a few episodes. So, all right. So any questions, Nicole? Have you filled one of these out before?
I've filled out like a traditional like Repsy. So it's somewhat similar, except for like this has more of the creative line items to it.
Okay.
So
let's go ahead.
For the traditional Repsy, like if someone was using that, would you use like an addendum or something to do the creative part? Or
yeah,
maybe that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
But, and you'll see the creative part will come both how we write up stuff in number one. There's a place in number two that we will get to in this episode. And then yes, the addendum. All right. So real quick, you know, as I had mentioned in number one, binder deposit is earnest money. In C, the balance of funds that are due at closing. Approximate would be used when there is sub two or owner finance scenario and the underlying debt is, we're not exactly sure what the payoff is. If you choose approximate, then choose approximate for the total purchase price as well. When we're looking at D, which is a proceed of a new loan, that's when there's some kind of bank financing. Use E, purchase money loan to seller. When there's going to be some owner finance, we put in the amount that the seller is financing. G, when we're buying subject to, and that would be almost always approximate. And now let's jump back to number two, and you'll see the other part of the financing. So you guys can see that again.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So buyer does not obtain the required financing, but otherwise complies with the terms hereof, the binder deposit less sales and loan processing costs incurs will be returned to the buyer. Okay. 2A is basically they're going to get a mortgage. Okay. And I almost never fill out anything with this, like ever. Okay. 2B would be there is some owner finance. And this is important. Now, you could bypass this and just write, like right down here, right after it says property, you could just write C addendum, okay? But if you're going to check some of these boxes, so you would check this one right here, seller. The balance due to seller will be evidenced by a negotiatory promissory note of borrower secured by a valid purchase money blank mortgage or trustee. Okay, everyone always asks what goes in there, right? And to be honest, it's kind of awkward. And so if this is a wraparound mortgage, I'll put wrap, W-R-A-P. If it's an all-inclusive, I will put all-inclusive right there. And if it's just a trustee, I would just put trustee to note or mortgage. Okay. You can just cross it out. Okay. It's not a huge deal. Okay. And where it gets to be, here's it says buyer and seller dated the date of closing bearing annual interest rate of blank percentage. You can put the interest rate there and payable. You can do dollar amount here per month for particular amount of years or months. Okay, you can fill all this out, or again, you can bypass it. This is what's important. This last line, privilege of prepayment does apply or does not apply. Anyone want to venture what that truly means?
Either does it have to do with like a penalty of paying, like paying
if you
it
want
off
to pay
before?
It off early,
yeah.
Do you have the ability to do so?
Mm-hmm.
So privilege of prepayment does apply, means that I can pay it off whenever I want. If it says does not apply, then that means that there's some kind of prepayment penalty. You would probably then want to write again, see addendum or see exhibit A and have a prepayment penalty written out, like what it will be, okay, in detail. Okay, the loan will be blank due on sale or blank not due on sale of the property. Cody, is that important?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, I always put not due on sale.
Not due on sale. So let's think about this for a second. If I'm the seller, I want there to absolutely be a due on sale. Because if I'm the seller, I don't want my buyer necessarily going and transferring that loan to someone else, okay? Just like the bank doesn't really want me to do it, I don't necessarily want them to do it. If I was the buyer and that was my goal, then yes, I would absolutely say no due on sale clause of the property. Make sense? Nicole, you following?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And just a side note, I do always fill out that section 2B instead of just putting C addendum, because I think it makes it a little more clear for people to see the number in there.
I totally agree. We do too. And it's really only a few blanks. And the one that's the awkward one is whether it's a wrap mortgage or an all-inclusive. Do you put anything different in that blank, Cody?
I put, if I do contract for deed, I just write contract for deed. Yep. And if they ever have a question, it's just, oh, that's just the way we're structuring the agreement.
So, and here again, we fill out creating the offer in the blank after money. I'll put wrap or all inclusive, trust deed and note. I would absolutely do contract for deed or anything else that we may be using. Check privilege of prepayment does apply. And that I can tell you, I've probably put prepayment penalties in less than five deals that we've done my entire career. So it doesn't happen very often. And normally I have some other way of dealing with it. And due on sale, make sure that you check the one that you need. Due on sale meaning, hey, due on sale is in force if you don't want the property to be transferred again. Or no due on sale if, hey, that's the goal, is that, and usually when, if a seller sees that and they have their attorney look at it, their attorney's going to come back and say, no, they don't want that. And I would say, I just want a one time where I can transfer and there's no due on sale clause, and that normally will get it done. All right, we're going to just go through one more slide. This is going to cover closing costs, and fairly easy, very straightforward, but super important. You forget to do this or do it incorrectly, and you could be putting closing costs burden on either yourself or the seller, whatever the case may be, and could really be the difference between getting the deal done and not getting the deal done. So, all right, so I just want to go through this and then I'll show you back on the contract. And so check the ones that you want to apply. And you can add in anything under the special notes or other. So be specific with owner's or lender's title policy. When doing cash or subject to, we put buyer will pay all closing costs under other. When doing cash, we will say all closing costs except for tax proration. So if we're offering to buy it all cash and we're willing to pay the closing costs, we'll pay them all except for tax prorations, and we'll put that in the other. Or we'll just put that whole thing. Buyer will pay all closing costs except for tax prorations. Sub 2 will not have any tax prorations. More than likely, the taxes are escrowed in the payment, and they've been collected up until that point, and you'll just pick it up and continue to make payments to that escrow account. Any questions?
That all makes sense.
So the tax prorations are basically for properties that are free and clear, and they have that like annual tax payment. Is that what that's referring to?
So tax prorations are important whenever you're doing anything, any kind of cash or hard money, private money kind of transactions, because now you need the taxes to be prorated, right? So if you're buying in, let's say, February, taxes are collected at the end of November in, I think, every market, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but I think. So if taxes were just collected, then what they're going to do is they're going to prorate so that the seller is responsible for the first couple of months of that year, and you're now responsible for the taxes going forward. When you're doing owner finance, depending on if the taxes are escrowed in the monthly payment, if they are, there's no reason for any tax prorations because they're already being collected each month.
Makes sense.
Okay, so 3, and not all of these apply in every market. Recording fees.
What are note stamps?
It'll vary in different markets. It's just that some markets will do some of the intangible tax. I've never seen an intangible tax. I'm not even sure if it's really applicable. I've never checked credit reports ever because we're not usually dealing with that. For me, it's usually on the buyer side, it's recording fees and perhaps transfer tax, but I have found one market that it's customary for the buyer to pay transfer tax. Normally, I would think that it should be the seller, but In Tennessee, I learned that it is customary for the buyer to pay this. And if there was a wood destroying organism report, a termite report, and it was required, then yeah, you could check that. Appraisal, we don't normally need. Survey, there's a whole nother section for survey. So we can deal with it here or we can deal with it somewhere else. Title policy. So if I'm the buyer, I may check this or I may not. And other, if I want to include anything else. Here on seller, if I check this, if there was any transfer tax, I might put here owner's title policy, satisfaction and recording fees. Again, the wood destroying organism survey, and then other. And if you can't quite figure out, check the ones that you think should be and then spell it out in the addendum. If you're not clear, always go back to the addendum and make it clear. Okay.
Yeah. And what I usually do is on the buyers, very similar to you, I'll check recording fees and title insurance policy. And then for the other, usually I'll put buyer to pay any additional closing costs under that other tab. And then in the seller will pay, I'll put owner's title insurance policy and satisfaction recording fee. So and that's my like default. If there's other things there, go through it at that time.
Well, like in like Nicole's and Nicole's in Florida, she has transfer tax. In Utah, we don't have any transfer tax, and transfer tax can add up quickly, especially if you're dealing with, you know, a more expensive type property. So that transfer tax would become something that I'd be much more aware. And if I don't know if that market has transfer tax, then I'm just going to put, I'm going to push it to my buyer or my seller, or whatever the case may be, not me. And then we'll see if there's any pushback. Any questions? Was that difficult?
Not when you're explaining it, Jeff.
Well, that was the most difficult part of the whole purchase and sale agreement. I mean, the rest of it is going to be super easy, at least until we get to the addendum. So if neither of you have any other questions, we're going to wrap this up and we will pick up on the next episode and keep going through the purchase and sale agreement. Let's go out and create some terms.